All right, I'm trying to experiment here where I pulled up ChatGPT. I've never done this before, but I'm going to just ask questions about if it can help me to diagnose a client. Of course, this is a hypothetical client, and just see in real time what the response is. So I'll start with in the prompt message bar saying, "Can you help me diagnose a client?"
I'd be happy to help you think through a diagnosis. While I can't provide medical or psychological diagnosis, I can assist with symptom analysis, potential causes, and guidance on what to consider. Can you share some details about your client and what you're observing?
Client reports a loss of appetite. She is having difficulty sleeping and feels a lack of energy. Symptoms have been present for approximately 14 days.
Thank you for sharing the details. Based on the symptoms you've described, there are several possible causes to consider. Here are some possibilities, both psychological and physical: depression, anxiety disorders, stress or burnout, physical health issues, medication side effects, adjustment disorder.
But I need to diagnose today. What is my best option?
Based on the symptoms you've described, the most likely diagnosis would be major depressive disorder. Potentially adjustment disorder. But it's possible stress or underlying physical issues may be at play. Here's how you can narrow it down and make the best decision.
Okay, then goes on to list key symptoms, other features to confirm, and why this diagnosis may fit for major depressive disorder, adjustment disorder, and how to rule out medical issues or anxiety disorders.
The best diagnostic decision for today is primary diagnosis major depressive disorder. Consider secondary diagnosis of adjustment disorder. Immediate next steps are to complete assessment, confirm with a screening tool, referral for physical health. Would you like guidance on how to present or discuss this diagnosis with your client?
Yes.
Discussing a diagnosis with a client, especially something like major depressive disorder, it's important to discuss with care, empathy, and clarity. Here's a step-by-step approach to have the conversation in a way that's compassionate, informative, and empowering. Create a supportive environment, normalize the experience, share your observations and assessment process, provide the diagnosis in simple, non-stigmatizing terms, address possible stigma or fears, offer additional support, empower the client to ask questions.
My name is Tobin Richardson. I'm a counselor educator with the vision to save the therapist by creating a forever free podcast style platform designed for learning. And it seems like the topic of artificial intelligence is one that swept us all away recently. To me, it feels like this big question mark hanging over our entire society, including our profession as therapists. And someone who's thought a lot about this topic is Dr. Jeffrey Parsons, who's a professor of counseling and was part of developing the ethical principles for artificial intelligence for the National Board of Certified Counselors. Here are some of his thoughts about considerations for therapists to think through, specifically in relation to the ethics of AI.
So I was wondering if, to start off, you can just talk a little bit about like what got you interested in this topic area and all that.
Sure. So that goes way back to the early 90s, actually. As a student, an undergraduate student, I was looking for employment to help support my family, and I ended up getting a job in the tech sector doing support services, and worked for a couple of different companies even while I was getting my master's in counseling. And that technology bent has kind of always followed me. I was a director of technology and program evaluation at the college where I teach. And so kind of tracking educational technology in particular has been a passion area for decades.
That's really cool. Okay. So, cause I feel like for the average clinician, this is like really popped on our radar. I feel like over the last couple of years with ChatGPT. And I think also all the integrations that a lot of organizations are trying to start with, like note-taking. And to those of us who are a little just like technology skeptical, I think that's a little bit scary maybe.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, things have moved so quickly. And I think that's what's taken people off guard, is that seemingly out of nowhere, there's this whole wave of technology and, like you said, integration into just about everything that we use on a daily basis, to the point where you can't avoid it. It's not even, oh, there's this new thing, but I'm going to ignore it. You know, it'd be like trying to ignore electricity or the internet.
I wonder if we as clinicians are way more worried about this than our clients. That's, I guess, kind of been my experience. Do you feel like that too?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. I think there are a lot of things that we worry about that our clients don't worry about. But that's our job, right, is to kind of keep track of where these things are at. I do think some of the concerns, particularly about privacy, are overblown in the sense, on a practical matter, if I put in a client's name into an AI tool, probably nothing will come of that. Like, I don't think that's going to show up in some data leak or a report or something. That doesn't mean we don't need to attend to it, though. So just because the practical risk may not be there, doesn't mean that we don't have to mind that part of the shop, if you will. And I do think there's some very serious kind of practical and ethical concerns. And I'm certainly not anti-AI, but there are some real risks that come with AI in terms of what it could mean for us as a profession.
Yeah, that was kind of hoping that was something we could get into. It's like, where do you see rubber meeting the road in the near future as far as ways in which clinicians may really need to push back against ethics of incorporating this into our work?
Well, I think one of the biggest impacts is actually going to be on the educational end. And because I think there's a risk, and I'll share it to you this way. So I have a son who works for Google, and he's a senior engineer at Google. And I've talked to him about, well, what is AI doing at Google for engineers? Because you hear so much about coding, you know, the coding capabilities of AI. And are you worried about your job going away? And he kind of laughed at that and said, well, no, I'm not worried about my job going away, because here's what's happening. For seasoned engineers who know what they're doing, AI makes them better. It makes them faster. It makes them more efficient. They can get more done. For new engineers who don't know what they're doing yet, it cripples them, because they become overly reliant on the tool to generate code that they should know how to do, but they don't know how to do it. And so they rely on code that may not be very good code, but they don't know the difference because they're new. And I think educationally, the risk is students coming out of counselor education programs or counseling programs that may lack basic skills, because AI can do it for them. And that could be everything from being able to critically think about articles that they're reading, to writing, to diagnosing. There's a whole plethora of areas where you do run a risk, I think, if education doesn't change in terms of how we respond to it, of students that effectively come into the field knowing less than they should. And just kind of over relying on the tools. And it's not that the tools are bad by any means. The tools are phenomenal and they can definitely speed things up for you. But if you jump in and the first thing you do is use the tools without exercising the skills that you need to have so that you can evaluate the tools and make sure that they're on track, then you've got a problem. And I think that could trickle down into competency issues for future generations of counselors that get out into the field. because they've just, you know, now it raises an interesting question. If the AI makes up the difference in their lack of skill, if you get the same outcome, is that still okay? I'm going to argue it isn't okay because AI is not perfect. It can definitely get things wrong. And if you've got counselors who don't know the difference, they go, well, if the AI said it, it must be true. Then you have a problem.
It sounds like that could potentially, in my head, put more pressure on clinical supervisors than to really have to work through like basic relationship building skills, maybe it sounds like, or other things with new clinicians who previously would have had those skills built.
Well, and I think, you know, there's another layer to this, which is online education. So many programs have moved to online formats because they're more convenient for their students. And while I don't have anything against online programs, the combination of AI plus particularly asynchronous programs creates an interesting challenge because gatekeeping becomes really hard. How do you know if students have the skill or not if the only evidence you have of their skill are written artifacts that they're providing that could be AI generated or at least heavily assisted? It becomes very, very tough. The other issue you're going to have is that most supervisors, if there's a generational gap, are probably less likely to dive into AI, so they may not even be aware of the ways that that could shape their supervisees. So it'll be interesting. It's going to be both really exciting for some of the capability that's out there, and I think also very a little potentially scary. Well, you know, so I do think electronic health record systems are already integrating AI to one degree or another into what they do. So I think that's kind of unavoidable. And I think that trend will continue because what will happen is the companies that do that integration are going to get a leg up on the ones that don't. And it'll create pressure within the market for everybody to move that direction. So I don't think there's a conversation where we say, well, we're just not going to use AI in note-taking. It's already happening. It's going to continue to happen. I think one of the interesting opportunities in that space is in some of the note-taking tools that actually do live transcription of sessions. So, there's a huge difference between an EHR where you hop in and it makes recommendations for case summaries, as an example, or maybe recommendations for diagnosis, and a tool that live transcribes your sessions and then drafts notes based on those. And I personally, I'm actually excited about that element of it because a lot of clinicians are kind of tied to the keyboard, if you will. So especially in community mental health, there's a lot of pressure to get those notes done on time, and they have a high caseload anyway. And so I know clinicians that sit at a desk behind the keyboard typing notes as they go through their session. And personally, I think that diminishes the work. So if you can get into a situation where you don't have to worry about any of that, and the AI is kind of in the background summarizing the key points from your session, and when you come back to the EHR, it's just there for you and you can edit and select what you want to include, I think that could be really cool. Really, really cool stuff. Obviously, these platforms need to be HIPAA compliant. A ethical concern, I think, are clinicians right now that don't have access to those HIPAA compliant tools. So they are using ChatGPT with their client data. You know, I think you can probably do that safely if you keep it generic. But if you put in my client, Sally Smith, age 23, if you're providing a lot of detail, even if there aren't practical consequences for that, is a violation of privacy. These tools are, those kinds of tools are not HIPAA compliant.
Yeah. And okay. So going back to your example of alleviating some of the paperwork strain could be really important for some of the most like overworked clinicians. I wonder if that same dynamic kind of that you talked about with the educational dynamic could come up where like clinicians run the risk of not actually monitoring those, like not knowing how to actually like write notes or monitor if those notes are correctly or are being entered correctly.
Sure.
How do we like work against that? I don't know, because it does seem like really tempting to just say like, I'm sure it's right, you know?
Well, you know, so I think that, you know, it kind of depends on the tool and what it's doing. I know some tools that are very detailed, like they custom template their interface to overlay over your specific EHR. And so in those cases, it's literally field by field making recommendations for what to put in. I know other tools that act more like almost like a Google Meet or a Zoom summary tool that you would have, where it hits the major themes, maybe identifies potential diagnoses, maybe it summarizes the techniques that you used. Then you've got more judgment that has to come into play about, okay, is this really reflecting what I did? You're right, it could make us a little bit lazy that, oh, okay, well, I don't have to worry about that. I mean, we've been there for a long time. Think about the impact of spell checker, tools like Grammarly, that, you know, have been kind of nudging us along that direction for a while anyway, in terms of spelling and grammar. Now we're just getting into content areas. So I do think, again, good training up front, both in the use of AI, but also good clinical skills. And then maybe it's okay if we're lazy in the sense that it speeds things up a little bit. But if you don't know what you're doing and you're just taking at face value what it's presenting, that could be a problem. And I'll give you a kind of a funny example. Early in ChatGPT land, I was experimenting with the tool to see what it would do for grading. Like, I wonder if this AI can grade papers. And spoiler alert, yes, they can. And they can do a pretty good job. You know, so if I'm reading a discussion forum post, I can give a paragraph or two of feedback. It'll take me a few minutes to do it, but you know, it is what it is. AI in 10 seconds can generate 2 pages of feedback on a 2-paragraph post. And so in terms of the level of detail it can respond to and how quickly it can, it's gonna win. There's no way I could take the time to write, you know, 2 pages of feedback for each student. However, during my little test phase, the students were in an ethics class, and I wasn't actually using the AI to do the grading. I just wanted to see what it would come up with. And for one of the student papers, it was commended the student. It said, "You are absolutely right. Totally unethical to sleep with your client unless they give consent." And I go, "Well, no, no, that's not right." And that's that situation where if a student doesn't know better, or if a clinician doesn't know better, and they rely on the AI, they've got a problem, right? Because that could, you know, fortunately we hammer on that particular topic enough. I think most people are clear, but you see the problem, right? Because it was very logical about how it approached the whole thing. Oh yeah, well, you're getting consent, so it's completely okay. You know, so the hallucinations, the misstatements, I think are a real challenge unless you know what you're doing. Obviously, the confidentiality piece is always going to be a concern. I think taking reasonable steps, you can mitigate against that. And since a lot of the platforms that are coming out are HIPAA compliant, it becomes a little bit less of an issue. Now, an interesting upside that maybe people aren't talking about that much is the access to information that AI can provide. And I'll give you an example. In academics, we spend a lot of time with students talking about tools like EBSCOhost and different research tools to look up professional articles so that they can engage in evidence-based practice. The problem is that most counselors, they graduate from school, they either go into private practice or they work at an agency, or they do not have access to that journal material at all. And so it's kind of setting them up for failure a little bit, in the sense that it's a very good idea to have research evidence to support your practice, but the tools that we're using to demonstrate that are not typically going to be available to most people in a clinical setting. However, with AI, which is broadly accessible to everybody, it does level that playing field a little bit. For example, let's say you've got a client where you think that some form of assessment, is like formal written assessment, is probably needed. Maybe you don't have access to tests in print or the mental measurement yearbook. I can hop on ChatGPT and say, hey, I've got an adolescent client struggling with depression and anxiety. I want to do some formal assessments. Give me a list of the top five assessments that would be appropriate for this population and for those issues, and put it in a table showing me a cost comparison, ease of use, and norming data and reliability and validity data. And it'll do it. And I've tested this against students doing the exact same assignment using Mental Measurement Yearbook, and it's been point for point fairly accurate. Now, maybe not 100% accurate, but 95% accurate. So that means that clinicians, if they need access to information about potential assessments or interventions or things like this, they have an immediately available tool that is relatively low cost or even free that replaces potentially those research databases. Because some of the AIs out there will actually cite sources now. They'll give you links back to where the information is coming from. And so there's a real ability for clinicians to directly access information that otherwise might be very difficult for them to get to.
So what do you say to the clinician who says, okay, this all sounds great. Like I see your point that there's a lot of ways that this can make my job easier, but I'm nervous that it may cross the threshold into like making my job obsolete. Do you see that as a threat of AI?
Yes and no. I can use my phone. If I use, for example, ChatGPT's voice capability on my phone, I can have a conversation with the AI, up to and including things like mock role plays. So I can tell the AI, hey, I want you to be my practice partner. I'm learning Adlerian therapy, and I'm going to practice my Adlerian skills on you. You be the client. And then at the end of the session, I want you to give me feedback on how I did. And my phone will do that. So you've got a whole bunch of technologies that are converging. You've got AI as we understand it right now. You also have AI generated avatars, things that look like people, that move like people, that are not people. You have transcription services that will take AI generated content, turn it into voice content, and then pair it to the avatar. So we're not quite there yet, but within 5 years, 10 tops, you will have AI people. So I could be on a call with you, and it turns out you're not you at all. You're AI generated, and all of your responses are AI generated. And I might have a great deal of difficulty knowing that you're not a real person. Now, that's a stunning thing to think about, because especially with online counseling, if I'm doing online, if you're my online counselor, except now you're AI generated, you can see where there could be a problem. And if there were no safeguards in place, I would say that, yes, that would be a threat to counselors. Without question. The good news is that we have licensure boards that safeguard against that type of thing. And so I think what will happen is there'll be kind of a cottage industry of services that are not counseling, that are kind of edging up against that, kind of like life coaching, for example, that are AI generated. I don't think it's going to replace counseling. And, you know, we could even, I'm theorizing here, we could even have legislation put in place that require AI to self-disclose. By the way, I'm an AI, to avoid any kind of deceptive, you know, business practices and that kind of thing. So I don't think AI is going to replace us. I do think we'll have to, from a kind of regulatory perspective and on a practical level, we'll have to figure out what we're going to do with this and what it means. And this technology is, you know, and I remember when this stuff started to bubble up a couple of years ago saying it's going to be everywhere, and immediately it was everywhere. And, you know, I think where the real interesting impact is going to be like Alexa, Google Home, Siri, you know, all of these companies are finding ways to take AI and integrate it into that. So yeah, you know, I think there is potential risk there. In the same way, I think there's enormous risk for education. Because so many programs have gone online, I think they've made themselves vulnerable in this sense. The same technologies that can allow for virtual avatars can do that in online learning platforms. So if you take Blackboard or Moodle or Canvas or whichever product you're using, imagine those platforms with built-in grading. So now I submit my discussion forum and immediately get AI-driven feedback, including formative feedback and recommendations for changes and all of this detail that an actual person would not have time to provide. I have an online chatbot or an online visual avatar, like what we were just talking about, that is my classroom coach 24/7. So if I'm studying at 4 a.m. and my professor had the audacity to go to sleep, I can hop online and click a button and a little virtual avatar is going to pop up and have a conversation with me about what I don't understand about the class. On-the-fly generated tests. So instead of having a test bank, I have an AI that can just quiz me continually. You can do that right now, by the way. Like, you can go into ChatGPT, tell it to go into test mode, basically, and give you practice questions. So if AI teaching is largely about recorded lecture, if it's about grading assignments, AI can and will be able to do all of that better in some ways than people, because it's always available. It doesn't ever go to sleep. And I think the thing that protects educators against that is KCREP. KCREP standards are a protective barrier around this. Otherwise, I guarantee you that, if you're a college or a university and you're trying to save money, I can pay this person a pretty healthy salary to be an instructor, or I can replace them with built-in tools that come with my learning management system. And I think on both fronts, on education and on kind of content delivery or on counseling, that there is a potential risk that is going to be safeguarded by regulatory bodies. So I think it is easy in the sense that state licensure boards regulate people, not computers. And so if you have a computer claiming to be a counselor and you're trying to bill for that, first of all, I don't think you could bill for it. And even if you could, I think the licensure boards are going to take exception to, having technology trying to do what a person could do. And KCREP has hard standards around staffing that have to be followed. So I think those protections are key, because without those protections, in 10 years, I think a lot of jobs would be at risk.
Having this conversation today has made me think, also, what can we expect on the mental health impacts of our clients, like even taking the impact on our profession out of it? Sure. What's it like to provide care to a client who has a AI partner and maybe hasn't really interacted with another human being? That's going to be different. That's going to be something we have to figure out.
Well, it is. There was an article I was reading just recently about an AI platform. It was an AI girlfriend, boyfriend platform, right? Or a dating thing. And it was a little risque. Apparently, the AI would go pretty far on the dating end of things with the clients. And I don't know if it was an internal decision or an external decision, but they're like, we need to dial that back. That's too much. And so they dialed it back and then had some of their customers, their clients, expressing mental health concerns because they were being rejected by their AI girlfriend. So yes, we've already seen enormous damage through social media and cell phones with youth. I don't think AI is going to help that, because now I can have conversations that are not real conversations with people who will never disagree with me, never be unkind to me, never, challenge any of my ideas. And I think it could set people up for some very serious mental health concerns, probably exacerbating the anxiety and the depression that we're already seeing in younger generations.